Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jibraj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Nirmit Parekh, founder and CEO of Apna. Apna is building the future of India's working class by redefining professional networking, hiring, and upskilling for millions of underserved Indians. The approach to this massive vision has primarily been around building a world-class product which is tailor-made for the needs of the working class with built-in network effects and moats that are irreplaceable. The execution for this has been beyond phenomenal by an incredibly talented and motivated team driven by great culture, resulting in over 10 million users and more than 1 million employers across 28 plus cities since inception. Nirmit is a serial entrepreneur who loves problem solving and leverages his fascination for it to build companies. He started 3 companies, attended Stanford GSB, and was a part of Apple before starting Apna. As he builds a category-creating company that is transforming the future of India, I speak with him about how he has gone about strategizing and executing the finer nuances of building Apna, including aspects around network effects, problem solving, consumer empathy and obsession, and scaling founders and operating teams with great culture. Thus, without further ado, let's dive in to the 62nd episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast, Building the Future of India's Working Class with Nirmit Parekh, founder and CEO of Apna. Thank you so much, Nirmit, for joining me. Absolutely delighted to be hosting you today.
Thank you, Jivraj, for having me here. Super excited to chat and share what we are building at Apna.
Thank you so much, Nirmit. And I'm absolutely excited myself because what you're building with Apna is such a beautiful genesis of everything in one. So be it social impact, the value creation, and a phenomenal product all come in one. So I'm delighted and excited to be speaking about it. But what I want to, you know, start off with and take a step back is perhaps understand your journey before Apna, right? Because I think you've always been the builder. Then there was a time when you went to Silicon Valley, you built products there as well, and you were working with Apple, right? And that perhaps would be a success in the definition of the traditional sense of it. But talk to us about how did you make the transition back? What was life before Apna? And what builds the entrepreneur in you? I think that set us with the right context to go ahead with the conversation.
No, definitely. So Apna, I started now, but this is my fourth company. I started my first one when I was 19. And my first one is into hydropower automation. And I know it's super unsexy, right? For a 19-year-old teenager to start a company in hydropower automation, right? You will see a dating app or a photo sharing app. So while I was in my second year of my engineering, there was this big floods on the west coast of Gujarat. And I really wanted to solve this problem of floods. You know, when you are in engineering, right? You are looking at these equations and you say that, why not apply to this real life problems? And of course, you're not seeing the real world much, but you want to go and just try and apply. And I also, I think so, that is where you have to be stupid, hungry and foolish to start doing it. And I actually went on the same path to solve this problem of floods. Interestingly, while I solved the problem of floods, I realized that if I could solve floods, I could manage water level. And if I could manage water level, I could also manage irrigation and hydropower automation. And so, What I decided, like, why not combine flood control along with all these business objectives and basically build a business around it? And that was Incon. So at Incon, we build flood control systems, which can also optimize water levels, optimize hydropower generation, and also optimize irrigation. We have automated dams, which are likes of Chamera, Parbati, AD Hydro. So have probably a majority of Indian power projects, we have gotten some VR form kind of help them. And while I was building my first company, I also started my second company. My second company is called Cruxbot. Again, very similar to the first company. It never started as a company. It started more like problem solving. And generally what I've seen, at least in my life, company building is more like a side effect of problem solving. It never starts while that you want to go and build a company. So I was on my first date with my girlfriend, who is now my wife. And we were at Crossroads. And generally, you know, you have this summary at the back cover of the book. You read the summary and you make a decision which book you want to read versus which you don't want to read. And we were there and she was telling me, you know, Nirmit, how cool it would be if somebody could, you know, summarize anything I'm reading on the web. I read a lot of medical papers and stuff. It'll be great. And of course, my first date, I really, really wanted to impress her. It was a Friday evening. It was a weekend. So in the weekend ended up, you know, jugadofying small tits and bits stuff and build a quick software. And it was more like a plugin to start with, which can summarize anything you're reading on the web on a quick web browser. And of course, next Monday morning, give it to her and she was impressed and we started dating. But the side effect was some of her friends started using Cruxbot. My friends started using Cruxbot and that's where Cruxbot was born. Built a company around it. 6 months later, we merged with Noho and then it got acquired by Intel. And that catapulted me to the US. I was the director of data analytics at Intel Education. And post that, decided to go for an MBA. Couple of reasons to go for an MBA back then. Firstly, I was 26, 27 at that point of time, was, you know, had been building back-to-back two companies. And I had a bunch of friends who were at Stanford at that point of time. And they were talking about, you know, how wonderful they get time to decompress. And this is a time to think about new things. And I said, it'll be great if I can also, you know, get to kind of decompress and just take a break in life and see that one. Secondly, again, this is Indian, you know, Indian in-laws problem, what we call it. So my wife, she was on her way to be a cardiologist. And she was at that point of time in degree number 3 or degree number 4. And both of my in-laws are also doctors. And so I only had a bachelor's degree. And they knew that Nirmit is going to build something else, is going to start entrepreneurship and do someday entrepreneurship sometime. And so they were worried. And I hear, and I really get it. If I'm like, tomorrow, if I have a daughter and I'm getting her married, I will have a very similar conversation with my potential son-in-law. So the idea is, so their question was like, if you go and you start something and if it doesn't work out, given my daughter is going to have multiple degrees and you are just going to have like one or two, or maybe just one at that point of time, what if you have an inferiority complex? And which we have seen a lot of time, like male egos have been fragile and we have seen, and I understand where they came from and really, and it was important to get parents' wishes right. And anyways, I was planning to do an MBA, so it kind of just worked out. And that was the second reason to go for business school. And the third and the most important reason was super excited about how network effect businesses were built. And if you say Apna today, I think so it's all function of such a brilliant decision. I decided to go to business school and learned how to go and build network effect businesses. Because while I was building Cruxbot and I was building Incon, on the other end of the world, a WhatsApp was getting built and Instagram was getting built. And my first reaction, right, when you see these companies was, oh, these are simple products. But then when you see how quickly they have grown, which are a small team, and they also have natural moats, right? See, till the intrinsic value of the new product is not higher than the network value of the incumbent, people are not going to switch. That's brilliant, right? So as an engineer, to me, this concept was super fascinating. It's like, I need to really learn that. And maybe I can apply it to what I build next, because that allows you to exponentially leverage your product at a much larger scale. Again, I didn't know at that point of time I was going to build Apna, which is probably, I would say, network effect on steroids, and we can talk about it later. But it kind of worked out, and probably the best decision to go to business school and decided to apply to Stanford. And Stanford luckily accepted me. And of course, life was great. I got beautiful 2 years to decompress, got humbled every day, found the bestest of the friends. Post that, also, and by the way, also got married. By the way, today I'm the favorite son of my in-law. So so all good. And they are super excited and of what I'm building at Apna. And now when they go and meet their friends, they say with pride, you know, this is my son-in-law and my son who is doing this. So it's good to see that. And post business school, worked with Apple. I was part of the iPhone product operations team and had a great time, learned from the bestest. I think that there is point of time where I realized, how do you, you know, use operations? How do you scale operations? How do you have excellence at what you build? Just brilliant. I've never seen such excellence, such attention to detail ever. And that perfection that goes at every piece in the product, even when you build like millions of iPhones per month. But how do you ensure that when you get an iPhone, when you hold it, you feel good, right? You feel that this one is just specially designed for you and it just works, right? So learn that. How do you do that? How do you have that customer excellence? By the way, I also started a deep tech like called Armada, where we contribute to the World Wide Web. We are building a lot of things on Jamstack and contributing to GitHub. And post that, started Apna. And Apna has been a very, very organic journey so far, right? See, when you talk about unemployment, when you talk about education, you talk about poverty, these are all earth scale problems, right? Like when I was in my third standard in my social studies class, you have the civics textbook. And in that civics textbook, the question is like, which are the top three problems of the world? And these things come up, or top three problems of India. And we always feel that this is a problem that somebody else is going to solve, right? Because there is too humongous for somebody to solve, right? We cannot. And I've been a similar journey. So today, fortunately, with all God's grace, right? And I think so the world has conspired us to kind of go and solve a majority of problems, but it didn't start like that. It had very, very humble roots, very humble beginnings. And again, it also never started as a company, right? It started as a problem to solve. So hiring was challenging for Incon and my family business. And at that point of time, I was also hearing a lot of things around employment. It was very funny, right? Like, at one side, you were hearing about unemployment. Other side, like, I cannot go and find people. Like, how to do that? So ended up, like, you know, looking at it, trying to solve this problem, first principles. And when I was realizing this, I saw there are a bunch of the companies inside the space, but the approach is more on a classified style model. And what I realized is, why not take a different approach to that? And a couple of reasons that kind of, you know, instigated to take a different approach. Again, the idea was not like, because somebody's doing X, I want to go and do Y. But so see, I always knew the employer side of problems, but I never knew the candidate side of problems. And so I decided to kind of go undercover. And the reason to go undercover was a couple of reasons, right? See, one, if you go and try and generally design things, is you go and talk to your user. But when you go and talk to the user, because of the power differential you have, a lot of times people don't share what is the pain they are going through. And if they don't share the pain, I can really not go and solve it. And because everybody wants to appear good in front of people. So think about this, like if I'm a 6-year-old kid and you're doing some consumer research study on to build a product, say an education product for kids, something like that, right? And you will ask me like, bacha, would you like to study? And would you like to be a good boy? I'll say, yes, I want to study. I want to be a good boy, or I want to be a good girl. But really think, like, when you were 6 years old, really you wanted to study? No, you wanted to go. I wanted to paint the walls. I wanted to dance. I wanted to do random things. I didn't want to study. But of course, when people ask you, you say, I want to be this person, because everybody has this ideal. So what I wanted to do is, we don't fall into this bias. And the only way to do is by observing what people do in the situation. So decided to do that. And during a lot of this undercover studies, what I realized that for most of these people, the rising working class of India, they don't have resumes, they have skills, number one. And most of these companies have all had this approach around resume, which was either copied from the West or from a white collar market. And that approach just doesn't work. Secondly, if you look at India, right, majority of jobs, along with the formalized job channel, which is the portals, also come from your network, right? You generally know a person who knows a person, right? And that is how, or you know a friend who knows a friend through how these jobs come. And we wanted to see, how do we kind of introduce that? Because that is where 60-70% of the liquidity of the market is at. Think about this, you're building a marketplace. How can you build a marketplace without that liquidity of the market? So we wanted to kind of go into that. So there were a bunch of learnings around that. Also, like one most interesting learning is, what I realized that people, you know, they have this champion sitting inside them, but the world has systematically, and I'm not going to mince my words here, the world has systematically ignored them and has put this glass ceiling around them. Somewhere, every single time, wherever this person goes, he or she is told, you cannot dream big because this is where you will always end up, right? And while all this piece was happening, there was this movie, Gully Boy, which was released. Again, that is where you say, where your world conspires you to do things. So I don't know if you watched that movie, but it's a very interesting story about this aspiring hip-hop artist coming from, say, a lower middle class family, and who has this crazy dreams. And there's this very beautiful dialogue between Murad, who is a character, and his dad. And the dialogue says, "Ke hum garib hai, right? We are middle class, and we don't have a right to look at dream." And his dad is crying. And then this guy says, "You know, main apna sapna nahi badlunga sachchai se mel khane ke waste. Main apni sachchai badlunga jo sapno se mel khaye." And the dialogue is such a powerful thing, right? Like, why should I go and change a dream just because of where I was born? And we want to somewhere go and give people a set of tools through which they can go and break this glass ceiling. So think about Apna, right? And that was a point of time I said, I need to really, really build this. Think of Apna as this arsenal which this person has to go and break this glass ceiling. And interestingly, in the movie, you saw that the protagonist meets with MC Share, Sky, which is like a network in a way, right? It's a professional network who help this person to kind of grow, and then it's taken to this platform where this person can go and share his work. And that's what the feed of Apna is, right? So professional network and Apna's feed is in a way exactly that, right? And where people go and give him claps or her claps, and that's where the entire thing. And that's the ethos of Apna, right? So we want to do four things. One, help people build digital professional identities. And this is why we allow them to build a quick visiting card, and that's how they go and build this digital professional identity. Second, help them get the best hyperlocal opportunities, which are either through a formalized way or through a non-formalized network. And again, we have been 16 months into the game, and it's been an interesting journey. Today we do north of 25 million plus job interviews per work-related conversation on the platform. And we have grown like north of 70 to 80x over the last 1 year. And maybe if you see last 15 months, you've grown north of 300, 400x. So it's crazy. Every single day we hit like a new record. So it's been a phenomenal journey for us to be a challenger in the market, to be a clear-cut market leader, particularly for the rising working class of the country. And then the third piece is this network and the feed, which I was talking about. So we are this professional community, or think about this, a professional network for these people to go and network with their peers with similar skills. We see north of 10 million plus conversations happening between people where people share their work. Like think about this, a lot of times there's this beautician and she gets a client who has a itchy scalp, is coming for hair color, and so she will just quickly text and ask on the group, like, you know, what kind of color should I use? Itchy scalp, L'Oreal Innova or Mazerol. And within 30 seconds, another beautician says, you know, use a L'Oreal Innova, it doesn't contain ammonia. And she uses it. And then at the end of the session, she gets like, say, a 50 rupee tip. She goes and thanks this person. So when people are stuck in their day-to-day doubts, that is where this conversation happens. And again, this is, so the first marketplace is a winner-take-all market, and where we are a market leader. So we are like light years ahead than all the other incumbents put together. When it comes to the second piece, which is a professional community or the networking, again, we are a market leader in our category. And again, we are light years ahead. And this is also winner take all market, right? On the white collar side, there's only one LinkedIn, right? And now given we own the moat, that is why I like, and again, I said like that Stanford thing, probably the best decision of my life was where I learned how do you go and build moats. And now we know that like even people go and try to copy the product, it's not going to go anywhere because it's very difficult to switch the entire network together. So that's the second piece. And the last piece is skilling. I think so. One thing which I realize is along with network, if you equip people with the right amount of skills, and skills keep on changing. So for example, the welder in my factory and the electrician in my factory have been electrician for the last 15 years. Why? Why didn't nobody tell this electrician 3 years down the line, okay, why not study this and we'll make you an electrical supervisor? Maybe why not study this and we'll make you a manager? Why did nobody do that? And the idea is I want people to upskill at variety of parts in this journey. And that's what we want to do as Apna. And that's the goal. So yeah, so that's Apna in a nutshell and why even build Apna in the first place.
That's phenomenal, Nirmit. I think the entire flow of your thought, right, and how your journey has progressed is such a huge testament to how an entrepreneur thinks, right, and how that DNA of entrepreneurship is actually built. Because as you mentioned, right, it starts with problem solving. And if you deep dive into it enough, the byproduct can be a huge, humongous opportunity that you land up into and build a sustainable business and company out of. So that's phenomenal to hear. And also, it's amazing how you made that extra effort, right? You became that undercover worker and, you know, built that life around you to be able to gather those rich insights and then tackled it in such an amazing manner. What I want to understand further is, you know, and double down on a couple of those amazing facts about Apna is the $1 million question, right? Which is how to build communities and network effects, right? So all of those learnings turned into one and understanding how you've been able to gather the kind of engagement and at scale, right? Not just at the initial parts, but as the company has grown, I don't think there's been anything compromised on part of the network, right? Like the professional identities that people are creating and how they stick around and how they are building trust with the platform is just phenomenal in nature, right? So everybody faces this problem, and it's probably the dream of every entrepreneur to build in network effects, to build a sustainable community around their product, right? And you've been able to crack that code. So talk to us about how some of these initial journeys and things got into place, right? I'm sure like it's not as easy or smoothy as you made it sound, right? So just help us understand some of those moving parts. And I think that would be phenomenal to just understand how the early ride of it took along.
Definitely. So first quick disclaimer, right? A lot of times, everything in terms of network is what we see. It is probably, you know, in hindsight, it's Vision 2020. So there is definitely a crazy stroke of luck and a lot of blessings. Without that, like whatever strategies we put in place, they don't work. So wanted to just acknowledge that. And maybe, see, what I can do is I can talk a bit about like certain frameworks. So if you see the way we run Apna is we run Apna with only two pieces, mathematics. And when I say mathematics, there's a lot of mathematics. Most of our meetings in Apna start and end with mathematics and mathematical equations. It would also sound weird, but I think so the reason why Apna is winning is also because of mathematics. And the second is crazy, crazy, crazy. And when I say the word crazy three times, because it's insanely crazy, the customer obsession which we have. I think so those are two things which are like the key drivers. And so let me quickly just go into each of this and maybe quickly share a bunch of anecdotes and stuff, right? So when it comes to mathematics, the idea around mathematics is very simple, right? If you see most of these network-related businesses don't start by being networks. They start by finding a single source application which gets converted to networks. For example, Instagram started with a photo with a filter, and you need to be really good at it, and then you build a network around it, right? And once you build a network, it is you cannot go into it. So today, even if, say, I and you raise $1 billion cash, and we decide to go against Instagram, we cannot touch it because they already built the network. Similarly, I and you raise $10 billion cash and go against WhatsApp, we cannot do anything. Like, I think so money doesn't solve the problem of network. So very similar, right? Like given we have built this beautiful network effect, and at Apna, there are two level of network effects. No, four level of network effects happening, right? If I kind of go into detail. It's interesting, I went to business school to learn network effects. And interestingly, all the four network effects which I learned at business school are happening at Apna at the craziest level, right? So let me start with the first network effect, right? More candidates, more jobs, more candidates. That's a two-sided network. Similarly, we have an Uber. And it's very difficult to go and disrupt that network. That is why all these companies are very valuable. So today, like even somebody decides to spend $100 million in Apna's marketplace, they cannot go and disrupt us because it's very difficult to go and break that flywheel. And that's why these companies can keep winning. So that's the first. Along with that, we have a second network effect that's happening. Each of these vertical communities, say the community of telecallers, which is like subreddits, which we have in Apna, the networking pieces which I talked about, acts as a network of its own. So we have 60 such network effects happening. So telecallers, painters, carpenters, drivers. So now if you want to go and disrupt Apna, you have to break all 60 network effects, which even with, again, $1 billion, you cannot today break it because, see, for networks, once you have a PMF, no money can go and change it, even if you go and copy the product 100%, because till the intrinsic value of the product is higher than the network value, and intrinsic value can never go higher than the network value. Again, comes back to basic maths. So that's the second level of network effects happening on Apna. So the second level, by the way, a good comparable for a second level, which is single set network effects, is a subreddit or a WhatsApp or a LinkedIn, and very difficult to break. The third level of network effects that happen on Apna is data network effects. A good comparable is going to be, say, a Quora. A good comparable could be a Google. People come, create data. This data provides more intelligence to keep making the algorithm better. So maybe it's our job matching. Or in a Quora style, you don't go in the morning and say, today I'm going to go to Quora, right? You Google search and you get exposed to some Quora link somewhere and it comes up. Similarly, people have these conversations, right? We see millions and millions of conversations every single week on the platform. And these conversations basically acts as pages for people to keep coming back to. Because, okay, there is a conversation happening around whether I should work for company X or company Y for a delivery boy. And somebody is another delivery boy and doing a voice search, they get exposed to this conversation and they keep coming back. And more they get exposed, more the conversations get better. So again, those two levels of network effect. Again, so that itself is, so if you see, there are a lot of search engines which came post Google who wanted to go and do this. But the knowledge graph keeps on getting better. And that is why it's difficult to disrupt Google. And there are companies who spend billions of dollars against Google and they have not been able to win. So very similarly, we have built this socioeconomic graph of the country. And that means nobody can do this trust matching and everything the way we do this. So that's the third level of network effect. And the fourth one is intra-network effects. Now, what is going to happen is a lot of time a carpenter works with a painter. Generally, a plumber and a mason will work together. They give gigs to each other. So that is happening as a network effect where think about two subreddits going and networking with each other and making it work. So that's the level of... So today I can share that if somebody even decides to take $10 billion and say, let's go and break the network, it's very, very difficult to break until we as Apna start screwing up. And that's why network effect companies become extremely, extremely valuable.
Awesome. No, I think it was such a sublime explanation of how Apna's being able to ride the flywheel and, you know, build those fundamentals on which it is very difficult to break, as you mentioned, right? And no, that's wonderful. And, you know, further, I want to understand a bit about, so we've understood the problem, the solution, and the community building aspects along with network effects. But if you can talk to us about the team that, you know, eventually builds this, right? And you've previously spoken about a very strong engineering product focused culture, and this has been exhibited in the multiple multiple features that you've gone ahead and changed, right? Which has become the core of the platform as well, be it in redesigning languages or having such many product iterations, right? The last I heard you speak was around 105. I don't know where the number stands today, but it's amazing to understand how that DNA is being built in. And as you mentioned initially, right, that excellence and how you learned that perhaps is so evident from the product itself. So if you can talk to us about some of these product values that the company dearly holds and how that exhibits in the product itself, I think that'd be a great genesis to understand as future entrepreneurs to how to think about building that core value proposition very well and doing things that will eventually make a difference 5 years down the line as well, because you're setting the bar up so high.
Happy to share that, right? I think so let me talk a bit about the core engine, which is customer obsession. And we call it insane customer obsession. And that's one of the part and piece of culture around Apna, is how do you get like super obsessed. So today, again, if you see a lot of insights around Apna started by talking to users, we learned and we understood. And how do we go and do this at scale, right? And that is probably dream for every single organization to do this user insights at scale. So what we have done is we actually have something called a sensory team. This team are like sensory nodes, and this team talks to almost, and I'm not exaggerating here, almost 40 to 50,000 users one-on-one, and people in this rising working class who are not even our users. And we talk to these guys and girls and try to understand, like, you know, what is their life like? What are the problems they are facing? If they are an Apna user, we try to understand what they like about Apna, what they hate about Apna, what are the features they want, right? And again, imagine we're doing it 50,000 per day, and there's all 50,000 unique people we are talking per day. And this all this thing kind of channels as an insight. So we have built an insight engine. And every single meeting which we do at Apna starts with this few insights that, okay, yesterday we learned 5 new things. How do we go and kind of implement it? And then we start putting it and implementing, and then we do a lot of experimentation. So today, if you see as Apna, we are on 134th iteration now. We did a bunch of more iterations over the last 2 months. So crazy amount of iterations now. And again, the idea is in each iteration is not like, as I said, like color change or a button change. Each iteration is a full-blown product feature that goes. And the only way you can deliver it when you have probably the one of the best, I don't know if there is an adjective called best test, but let me just create one. The most superlative adjective I can think of, and I can maybe make up. So bestest product and engineering team. And it all depends on how we go and design team. So as we start talking about teams, right? I think so when you go and blitz scale a company, right? There are two things, right? I think so everybody talks about how do you go and scale up EMF. Nobody talks about how do you go and scale decision-making inside the org. So if you look, a lot of companies who have really done in 10 to 100, what they've done is they've scaled decision-making across the org. And again, the way to scale decision-making is when you go and find people who are smarter, better than you, at those various walks of life and functions, and allow them to run the show. And of course, with the guardrails of the vision in place. So today, tomorrow, somebody cannot go and sell a Ferrari on a platform. But with the guardrails in place, and of course, and that's never a problem because you always find the smartest folks who can come and join. But with its guardrails of vision, so what we have done is we have built this beautiful decision-making framework, which we keep on using at Apna a lot. And once we do that, and we've been lucky, right? So Karna used to run strategy and operations for Uber. After that, he ran strategy and operations for first in US and then EMEA and APAC. After that, he came and was part of the growth at Uber Eats. He's running our marketplace. Manas, who was a partner at BCG, is running our growth and the business at Apna. And we are early engineers and founding engineers of companies like Swiggy and Dunzo and all kind of coming and helping us basically run engineering at Apna. Similarly, Karthik was a group product head at Mintra, and he's now running product around communities at Apna. So if you see people from various walks of life are coming and joining us, and we are very, very lucky to have and build a team which is, I think so, and most of these folks are all across the world, and we are all working from different parts of the world, right? And we have a global team. And the idea is because anybody who is excited about the problems you're solving the problem for unemployment. And as I say, right, you solve for unemployment, you're solving for poverty, you're solving for education for the next generation and also for this generation because we also upskill people, and you're also solving for healthcare. So with one problem, we can solve all these 4 major problems of the world. And whatever we try our best to kind of do that. So again, the idea is in the team, how do you go and scale? So that is why to get into Apna, at senior levels, you have to come up and do a working assignment. And so what we do a 4-hour jam session with every person who applies with us. For this 4-hour jam session, folks prepare for a week and a half. And it's crazy. It's an interesting set of questions which we do. We design a lot of times, we'll ask people to go on user interview researches, people design wireframes and come. And that allows us to do two things, right? A, get people who are passionate, because if you're going to work for a week for even to build a 40 pager deck to come and present, even to go and apply to Apna, that means that somewhere self-selects people for passion. And the questions are pretty interesting where we allow, where we want you to talk to users. Of course, we are not going to say that, but if you really want to solve your problem, so we also check for insane user obsession. And then of course, there's a lot of mathematics involved again, which is not then the question. We want people to think about mathematics and frameworks. And the bestest of the interviews that have happened are people who came up with a lot of frameworks and mathematics inside this working session. So I think also we use this entire way of working sessions, and where every working session, the entire leadership team is there sitting. So we invest time. So when we say, tell a candidate that you come and work for Apna, but and when this person is investing time, we are respectful of their time, and we all ourselves, and it is hard, right? Because that is the time we are anyways doing our day job. So we take the time from our sleep somewhere, right? Or we sacrifice it from the family time. But the idea is if somebody's putting in a week of work for to come and join us, let's do justice to that. So we go into a discussion with the person on the other side also gets to know how we are thinking. And that's a very interesting way to go and find a person, find a fit. Because think about this is like dating, right? We make the person date with the idea for a week. And a lot of times you might like someone, but when you date, you realize, oh, I don't like someone. And at least we go and solve for all those early stage, you know, problems around dating. And once now people come, they know what they are getting into. And we also understand the passion on the other side. Yeah.
Awesome. No, this is all of these insights that I think mind-boggling for me, because to understand that you're creating a talent-oriented network, which is not just passionate and experienced, but also mission-driven towards what you're doing, and then getting in them in the same room with the same passion to work on those iterations and make the best version possible. I think that's just wonderful to witness and to know that, you know, this is being built out of India and you're just getting started. So I think that's so refreshing and wonderful to hear. I think further, you know, I want to understand the good problem to have, but the one that talks about scaling, right? And bit scaling is the subject that we've often heard about, but the kind of numbers that you are witnessing are almost unprecedented at a company level at this stage, right? Because we're not talking about a three-year-old company which found PMF and is now accelerating to the 10 200 journey. We're talking about a less than two-year company, if I'm not wrong, who's grown consistently over short periods of time, which has compounded insanely well in the long period, right? So talk to us about how do you as a founder prioritize your time frame, right? Because I think that's going to be a major issue as well, because so much of the vantage point in terms of the vision is just in your head, right? I know it's getting transformed a lot to the team as you scale, but so much of it is in your head still. So there's a lot that needs to be done on the macro aspect, while there are a lot of micro aspects to run as well. And of course, these things will require a lot of administrational oversight, a lot of decision-making oversight, a lot of hiring important decisions, and multiple moving parts that, of course, you'll be aware of further, right? And then there's the team who needs to execute at the ground level. So combining all of that in one, I think, how do you deal with the problem of scale? And personally, how as a founder have you been able to navigate it? Because I just like a last plug-in, I remember this phrase, I think it was Reid Hoffman, right? Companies grow, but founders have to grow along with it at that scale, right? So how do you manage that? I think that'd be fabulous to hear.
So actually, I learned a lot of this from Reid firsthand. So I was part of the founding class of Blitzscaling at Stanford. I was so lucky. I was part of that cohort when this class was happening. I was there. I was one of the 25 kids who made it to that class. So I was there and probably one of the most fascinating class at business school where I got to hear from Reid, Eric Schmidt, Reid Hastings, and everyone coming and giving their own flavor around how do you build a company? How do you scale a company? So my biggest learning, right? I think so. You rightly said, like, when teams scale and also product scale, how do you go and scale the founder? And when I think about scaling the founder, I always talk about scaling decision making, right? As I already said. So one is, of course, by finding smart people and you scale that decision making and give them a framework to think about, right? I think the frameworks are very important. The second thing is, as a founder, you also need to understand what are priorities versus not. So a founder in a seed stage company, like say if I and I'm going to say this with the highest amount of humility, is I cannot go and get an IKEA table as a seed stage. If I got an IKEA table, I would integrate it by myself. If at this stage I'm integrating an IKEA table, yeah, I'm actually not spending my time rightly, because my time should be spent taking much stronger decisions. And I need to find the right person who can actually integrate the IKEA table for me. Because so, and that was also one of the reasons to go to Stanford, right? What, say, when I built the first two companies, they were pretty small and tiny companies, right? And this is like flying a Cessna. When I went to Stanford, I wanted to learn how to scale. And actually wrote in one of my essays is, I know how to fly a Cessna. Teach me how to run an airline. And that's what I wanted to run. Because running an airline doesn't mean you are flying the plane. You find the best pilot. You find the best staff. You end up finding the best hospitality crew. You end up talking about grievances. So how do you go and do that is again, it comes back to team scaling. So A, first and foremost is build a team. Second, prioritize in the most ruthless manner. There are 10,000 things which are going to demand your attention. And how do you prioritize in the most strategic way? Again, that is where mathematics and empathy comes at play. How do you use mathematics and empathy to go and prioritize? What are these 5 things I want to do and 5 things I want to prioritize well? And I'm learning. See, it has also been a journey for me. A lot of things which I learned from my bosses and super bosses at Apple are it's coming handy. My classes, what things I learned from Reid Hoffman's blitzscaling classes are coming handy. A bunch of you who taught me at business school, like, you know, all those things are coming handy when I talking about scaling. So again, ruthless prioritization and building the team is the only way you can scale, because there'll be 10,000 things which are burning today. You have to figure out which one you want to solve now. And again, there's this framework of urgent versus important. How do you use that framework in the right sense? Because a lot of times we try to get to urgent matters, but miss out the important matters. A lot of times it's okay for an urgent matter to be there, but you go and solve for an important one, because an important is going to be urgent in future. And an important intersection urgent is the most thing. So we, again, it comes back to framework. So we do that. And again, 3 things is reiterating: great team, ruthless prioritization around urgent and important. And third, you might think about it, I want to prioritize, but every day you'll forget, because in the heat of the moment, you take decisions, right? You keep reminding yourself that basically rule 1 and 2 are very important. So that's the third rule, because it's very easy to get, okay, I'll go and build it myself. Because see, as a founder, you have this insatiable, I don't know if I'm using the right word, insatiable hunger to go and solve the problem. And then a lot of times like, I want to solve it. And then I'm like, no, I don't want to solve it. Let me find somebody to go and solve this in a better way than I do. And that's important. Yeah.
Wonderful to hear again, because I think there's a evident structure that's visible in your thought process, considering that, you know, you've been through that journey and you're preparing for what lies in the future. And that's just amazing to hear, to be able to, I think, perceive the future and get ready for that and add method to the madness is just so important and is so visible from your words itself. I have one last question on Apna, and then we'll move on to some of the closing aspects where I want to discuss a bit about you. But in terms of Apna, you know, we've also seen the product roadmap evolve in a wonderful way, right? Because it was not everything done on day one. There were things which were mapped and then you built from there. And now that as you scale further, right, be it in terms of geographies, be it in terms of other aspects of the product, the things you've spoken about in bits and pieces in the past, be it scaling, be it understanding more about the user segment and then building on top of it and solving for the variety of problems that exists. So if you can talk to us about how have you thought about depth versus breadth, while building products and expanding categories, that would be wonderful to understand from a more strategic standpoint and how maybe founders can go about carving the product roadmap for a particular market leading sort of a position, right? Because now that you've won certain markets, you want to, of course, go after other complementary ones, but would love to understand the entire spectrum from your lens.
Right. So I think so basically I did it from, and I'm just kind of going down my memory lane thinking like, how did we really start and what frameworks that you are using? So it starts by finding out those 10x problems. Right? See, any process, let's say I want to go and improve a process X or a process Y, any process are going to have certain places where you can go and create a 10x experience for the user. And the idea is identifying those 10x pieces and then going and improving on this 10x things. And that 10x things for us, tennis things was, how do you integrate social, intersectional, professional together? It's a very interesting problem to solve, particularly with Indian context, right? How do you solve this problem of digital professional identity? So what we said is, let's prioritize, because of course you can build 10,000 things. And as a founder, entrepreneur, you have all these crazy things you want to build, but again, comes back to ruthless prioritization. So you prioritize this 10x experiences, and that's what you want to start with. Once you started winning those 10x experiences, because those are the places where you'll get the maximum upside and learn the most. Along when you started this, your product now gets into a place where your product is now working. Now you want to divide your team between 2 pieces, is incremental and exponential. And incremental is more like, how do I keep on exploiting what I got it right? And exponential is, how do I not forget to explore new things so that I can keep expanding? And so what we do is, at every team, we have designed a team. One is a team which is going to do incremental. And then there's a team which does moonshots. And the idea is that, see, a lot of times, irrational ideas are the ideas which do well. And we don't want to put a plug to irrational ideas. We want people to try and experiment in the irrational manner. You see, it's a bell curve, right? The more you experiment with the more craziest thing, your bell curve gets more and more broader. Bell curve gets more and more broader. You'll either come up with, for an experiment I'm talking about, a super stupid outcome or a super awesome outcome. Given I have to increase my super awesome outcomes, I have to also increase my super stupid outcomes. Again, comes back to the bell curve. If I try to take it from a smarter view, I'm going to increase my pull of my bell curve. When I pull up my bell curve, my probability of success is going to increase. And that is where I'm going to do incremental innovation. That's what my incremental team does, where I will end up with an outcome which is not going to be super awesome, but it is, so it's not going to be 100x outcome, but it's going to be 2x, 3x. And we keep improving this 2x, 3x engines for the processes which are already working. And we do this at scale. So again, that's how we think about exploration and exploitation. And it's very important to keep doing both, because it's very easy to get comfortable to a place that, okay, we have kind of done it right. And actually, the network effect businesses, a lot of times we feel like, okay, we know we've gotten it right. Like now, but look at Facebook, right? They keep experimenting even today. If you look at LinkedIn, they keep experimenting even today. And they know that at least they're light years ahead when it comes to somebody to go and break that network effect. But it's very important to keep on doing this incremental as well as exploration kind of innovation or moonshots to keep on kind of getting the best utility at the end of the day. Yeah.
Awesome. I think customer delight has to always be a priority. And I'm guessing, you know, that's the driving factor behind all of the exploration and incremental stuff. But again, I love that framework. And it's great how, you know, there's a lot of structure, as I mentioned, again, reiterating the fact that I see this constant structure in your words, which is just amazing to absorb. Thank you so much for that line of thought. I think, Nirmay, that was one of the favorite aspects of the podcast that I've heard to date, and one of the most intrinsic while structured explanations of company building that I've heard for a while. So thank you for that. But further, you know, as we conclude what has been a wonderful conversation, I want to take a couple of minutes and ask the same set of questions, similar in fact, that I asked to all founders, to just have a deep dive into your thought processes as a person and as the founder that you are, right? So the first up question up there is basically around what keeps you curious and motivated. And this is with the context that I understand, while the value proposition and the mission in itself is so wonderful and so magnanimous in nature, that keeps you motivated, I'm sure. But beyond that aspect of it, on a day-to-day basis, on a more a fundamental person level, right? Like, what is it that, you know, helps you maybe get up every day, and what are you looking forward to? I think those are the smaller aspects of how a founder of a company this size and in a journey which is going to be wonderful thinks. That's the primary purpose of being able to ask this. So over to you for this one.
Right. No, I think so. Very interesting. And again, so today at least 90 to 100% of my mind is totally full with users and insights and all. But I'll try to at least take a step back and try and answer. So one thing which I've seen so far, and at least historically, and again, this is me reflecting back, introspecting. I get into this introspection modes a lot. Is that what I realize is I love problem solving, and a lot of times I'm obsessed about problem solving. There's a problem, I definitely need to go and solve it. So every week, actually, I end up solving at least one problem. So if you see in the weekend, I spend a time. So last weekend, we had a problem with our flush was not working, and I ended up figuring out a way that how to design a ball cock system which just works smoothly without breaking. So again, a week before, a friend of mine was going through an interesting emotional problem, ended up problem solving it and tried to put some strategy into that. I think so most of my weekends I spend problem solving. I enjoy building new things. And even today, while I'm building Apna, I at least build one thing every week. And that one thing could be as simple as going and solving and making your flush right, to going and helping solve somebody else's life, right? A lot of persons I don't know. And that's just important, right? Again, everybody, and that's one thing, it's more like a ritual for me, and I try and do it, and it just makes me happy. Another thing, right, what keeps me going, right? I know that, and if you look at it from a broader aspect of it, right? So a lot of times, I think so, there are two set of things, right? One is, you definitely have this vision where you want to go and change lives of, like, you know, millions and millions of people. Because for me, as I said, right, this numbers of users and interaction, they're not a number in a pitch deck or a metric in my MIS, right? These are this dreams and smiles of millions of people who are writing the growth story of India. And I get to play a small role in helping them, you know, in fulfilling their dreams and smiles, and thus fulfilling the growth story of the country. So having said that, there are a couple of people whose dreams and smiles are also important to me is in my family, right? The smile when I see, so I've always been an engineer. As a kid also, I was taught how to, you know, break apart things, how to fix, and that's how my entire childhood. So my dad is an engineer and my mom is a homemaker, and they both are like very, they both have kind of, you know, always pushed me to run and do more experiments and try building. And the reason I love building is how I was raised and born. So whenever I build something, the smile I see on their face is just like it. It's that's it, right? Like a lot, and honestly, those are the few things that I drive, right? My wife. So if you see, like starting from Cruxbot onwards, she has been in my life and probably the most inspirational source for me. So she is very different than me in a lot of things, right? A lot of times I might give up, but she's like, no, Nirmit, this is good, but why not do take one step ahead? You need constantly somebody who pushes you to keep, you know, to going that extra mile. And I get that inspiration from her. And it's just so brilliant, right? Because it's very easy to get, you know, to get like satisfied with what you're doing. And she will ensure that, no, Nirmit, you need to be a bit hungry. Like, why not do even a bit more? And at the same time, she's also my safety net, right? A lot of times when I am like, see, as a journey, right? I talked about a lot of good things, but of course, the journey of a founder is not like this, right? It's morning, I feel that everything is going right. In the evening, I feel like, oh, nothing is going right. Again, next day morning, everything is back to normal. Like, so it is during those point of times where my parents and she has been beautiful safety nets. I think so. And that is very important. See, in this, as an entrepreneur, right? The kind of problems you go through, right? And that's a psychological price you pay to be an entrepreneur. You need this social safety net of a family. People who will be with you and tell you it's okay to fail. And I'm going to still love you even if you fail, right? That's what you need. And because for you to go and take that bold risk, that is just so important. Just so important. And for me, so I think those are the softer elements of what we are, of how I think about things and what drives me. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I think all in all, to just know that, you know, you're exploring your curiosity to the extent and with the social safety net and with the love and admiration of everyone around you is just phenomenal to hear. I think that's the perfect recipe that a founder can perhaps hope for. And it's great to see you not just utilize it, but to exploit it in such a positive manner and create invaluable amount of returns for everyone involved in a social way, in an impactful way, in a business model, sustainable, profitable way. And I think the kind of impact Apna is creating is self-explanatory. And I'm sure all of these efforts, bold decisions are going to be worth it. And the results are already showing. So phenomenal to hear that. I think for the next part, and I want to double click on one of those aspects that you mentioned, right? But when the going gets tough for you, right? And I remember, again, I've quoted Vinod Khosla a couple of times on the show, but he mentions to Sam Altman once that, you know, one of the toughest decisions for a founder is to understand when to go to whom, right? Like what decision to take when, and how do you resort to somebody else for that decision, right? And this stems from having that support network around you, right? This could be founders, this could be family, as you mentioned, this could be, I don't know, investors and a lot of other people, right? So talk to us about how do you deal with, I don't know, problems or challenges that are maybe beyond yourself, and how have you gone about navigating some of those pivotal decisions in life, right? Because as you mentioned, like not just companies, but you've gone from grad school, business school, and then you've also done great stints at world-class companies and then taking the decision for Apna. So all of this combined, like decision-making and mentorship, how do you kind of tackle that?
So a couple of things, right? I always have surrounded myself with people who inspire me, people whom I can learn from, right? And it could be friends, it has been mentors, my board members at Apna, and also family, right? And what I've done is generally, again, it comes back to a framework, right? When you have a problem, you think about who is the person in your life who can really go and solve this problem in the most best way, right? Say when it comes to a problem around hiring, I know this person X or this board member Y is just amazing with around hiring. I'll go and do that. When it comes to product, I know board member Z is just amazing with that. I will go and go to that board member Z. When it comes to a lot of pieces around, say, data, I know this classmate I studied at business school has been amazing with this. Let me just go and talk to this person and learn from this person. And again, it all comes back to one is your ability to go and ask for help. A lot of times people are scared to ask for help because people worry that how they're going to get judged. One thing which I learned during one of my touchy-feely classes at Stanford is that it's okay to ask for help. Like everybody struggles, right? You are not the only one struggling. And I have now started very openly asking for help. Like, you know, I'm stuck here. Can you help me? And I've seen the world has been very kind to me. Folks have gone out of their way to help me. And it's a beautiful world we live in. And just, I think so the one mantra is ask for help. It's okay to show your vulnerabilities to people. It's okay to say that you cannot do it, because there are people who will help you to do it. If you say that I can do everything, then nobody is going to come and help you, right? And that has been my learning so far, yeah.
That's wonderful. Again, I think just thinking in frameworks and then understanding what goes behind it and then just approaching it in a sublime manner and asking for help, I think that goes without saying. I asked you to be on the show and you readily agreed, right? Had I not even asked, this wouldn't have happened. And so that's a testament to it as well. Just small plug-in, I think you mentioned the class Touchy Feely, right? And I'm reading the book Connect by the professors of Touchy Feely, I think, and that's just a wonderful read. I think everyone who's listening and should also grab that if they can find the time to. So no, this is wonderful. For the second last question, you know, as I was thinking, I realized that a large part of this conversation has been about structure, frameworks, but you have always answered with a smile, and I see you enjoy this journey a lot, right? So just if you can perhaps ponder to us that beyond, if not Apna, I know that's a major, major part of your life. How are you like as a person? I think this is a very lighthearted question, but to just deep dive into what do you enjoy beyond the aspects of work, and how are you during workplaces? What fun looks like at Apna with colleagues? What fun looks like for you beyond the scope of work? Because again, this has been a narrative that I don't know is not out there a lot, but of course, founder journeys can be tough, right? Like I'm sure like it's a mountain hill of a journey and it's difficult to manage everything. So just to understand the light heart of it, I'd love to know what you'd resort to for, I don't know, fun.
Right. No, happy to share that. So again, maybe it's going to be a controversial answer, but for me, like, so I don't have work and life, right? Yeah, it's fused, because like I was just talking to one of my friend Gaurav from Stanford, and he said like it was, I think, second year of my engineering, and we were chatting about it, and I was talking about this one idea which just made a lot of business sense. Like, Nirmit, would you do this as a hobby? And I'm like, no. Like, then why build it? Very, very, very. And that conversation has changed my life, right? And it's like, so one, I only do things which I would have done it as a hobby, if even I would have not made money, because I really want to do it. So when you do your hobbies, you don't feel like you're working. So for me, this is actually fun, right? in the most transparent and honest way, right? It's fun. I enjoy frameworks. I enjoy using mathematics. I enjoy talking to users. So this is like, think about this, Nirmit, gaming 24/7, right? And that's that. And that keeps me like, you know, that keeps me spending time with frameworks and actions. And I don't think so I would have done anything, because there's work and then there is life's work. And I think so Apna is my life's work. I think so. I want to really solid. And as I'm spending more and more time with this audience, what I'm realizing is I need to really go and, you know, go and give them this arsenal, right? As I talked about, to go and break this glass ceiling. And I enjoy building this arsenal for them. I was at a lot of times in a lot of situations into very similar places where somebody in the network or some opportunity just came luckily and things just worked out. How can we create such kind of luck, like manufacture luck for people if we can? And if God permits, I'm also a big fan of how a lot of things, you know, the world, God, superpower, whatever you call it, conspires to get things done. So if everything works well and all these blessings which we get from our users, like, can you imagine, like, I wake up to almost 50 to 60,000 thank you messages a day, and that keeps me going. And it's phenomenal, right? When somebody says that, thank you so much, I got a job. So because of you, now I can go and sponsor my kids' education. Thank you, because of you, I could do my mother's surgery. And that is just such a brilliant way to wake up, right? Like, can you imagine, like, you get to do what is fun. You get to change lives of people. And of course, create wealth for your shareholders, because you want to make it sustainable. And this is a strong testament, right? To a lot of times, the world always says that when you go and create a company with a deep social cause, right? It has to be working on some nonprofit. How do you, and generally profitable companies go in a very different direction. The idea is, this is like, I think so Apna, I hope we can prove to the world that you can build a company with a deep social cause, connect it to a robust business model, and still do good by creating and generating wealth for shareholders.
Absolutely. I think that vision in itself is so powerful. And to know that you're being able to enjoy building that vision in such an amazing manner. And I think it just reflects from your demeanor as well, right? It's not just something to say. It just reflects the way you talk, the way you carve it out for us. And that's just so powerful. And I wish that for, I think, everyone who's tuning in and myself, in fact, right? Because if you can find a purpose in life that is so powerful as well as something that you enjoy so dearly building, I think that just forms the best balance one can perhaps hope to inculcate. So that's phenomenal to hear. I think I have so enjoyed this conversation. I couldn't think of a fitting last question, but at the expense of being stereotypical, right? I think it'd be great to just summarize all of the discussion and maybe ask you the top three learnings as a founder for you, because the way I look at it, there are a million and the ecosystem is thriving, the millions of Indians thinking of, you know, riding this entrepreneurial pathway, building products that will shine in the future and build for the world, right? And as we learn from the likes of you who are setting the standards high, it'll be amazing to just know what some of your best and favorite, if top three learnings, any top three learnings that you might have for the founder journey.
Right. Okay, let me be spontaneous here and let me just, because a lot of times like when you have this, you know, this first order thinking, the second order thinking, a lot of times when you start thinking in a second order, the first order never comes out. So I want to ensure that I'm being very spontaneous with extreme first order thinking and sharing that whatever just comes to my mind first. So my first one is going to be prioritize. And the reason to say that is there are 10,000 things which you can do as a founder. If you figure out a way to prioritize, see the difference between say a good company and a bad company is they do different things. The difference between a good company and a great company is they do same things, but in a different priority. So again, it comes back to prioritization. And even like when I go and try and find people and particular executives, I look at what is the power of prioritization. Can they prioritize well? So that's one. Second one is going to be, see, there can be tons of ways to make money inside the world. But if you get a chance to do some good while making money, just do it. And because a lot of times when you do good, believe it or not, the universe will conspire for you to make more money. And you just solve a problem and companies will be built around it. I think so. If you see, my entire life was all about problem solving and companies just started coming around it. None of these things started as a company to start with. So if you can get to do some good, just try to do that. And the third one, I think so, again, mathematics and customer empathy or obsession combined in the right way, right, in frameworks will do wonders for all the decisions which you prioritize in part one of the things, right? So again, I think that these three things came very spontaneously to me, just sharing them, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. I think prioritization and mission-oriented work and ensuring that, you know, that gets executed in the best manner possible is just an amazing way to end this conversation. Thank you so much again, Nirmit. I have learned a ton from this conversation, from the pure candidness in explaining some of the structures and frameworks of how you've built Apna, to understanding that problem solving and natural candidness can go a long way in your journey if you just stay true to your roots. So I think that's wonderful. And thank you so much for being amazing throughout this wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much, Jivraj. I also enjoyed the conversation and thank you.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible. Nirmit's love for problem solving and his candid explanation of how Apna is positively transforming millions of Indian lives is truly spectacular and extremely actionable for anyone looking to start and successfully build a company. That was it from the 62nd episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast, where we heard Nirmit Parekh, founder and CEO of Apna. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you're finding value with the podcast, do follow it on the audio streaming platform of your choice, drop in a review, or subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.